get through your guys' recording because my mind was doing so many, everything you said. Like, people don't understand. Like, the reason I can't make it through a movie is because, like, every little thing in the movie generates like 90 ideas in my head. And like the system just overloads and I crash out. Right. So it's gotten to the point, I don't know how I used to listen to like 26 hours of podcasts a day.
Oh, right? I know. Yes.
Now I can listen, like, literally, like, I would have to stop every like 10 or 15 minutes because my brain could not handle all the ideas at once. Right. And so I listened. Like, I listened today to the last half hour when I was out on my run, and I actually, I did my running style of taking notes, which is sending texts to Laura, right? So I have a lot of notes on the last, like, 30 to 45 minutes, and I also noted a few things that I had thought about in the earlier parts, but it got easier to me to listen to longer parts the more I went into it, because the thing that happened towards the beginning was actually quite startling for me and took me a long time to come to terms with. And so then it got easier to listen to the rest and I was able to listen in larger chunks. So I don't know if you want to start with that startling revelation or what you want. I don't know that we need to have like structure or form. I have like a lot of notes here on certain things that you guys talked about that is, I guess, just like things that you said made me think of other things or some analysis of what you're saying. I don't know anything about Stephen King. I think probably I've seen like, maybe I've read one book when I was a teenager and maybe seen, I've probably seen movies that were Stephen King movies, but I
didn't know. That you didn't know. Yeah.
That would be my guess. Or more likely I slept through movies that were Stephen King movies that I didn't know were Stephen King movies because I fall asleep in the movies all the time. It has nothing to do with whether they're good or not. I guess the way that I see it, the way that it has to be is it kind of has to be like as if we were sitting like in a dark corner of a bar together, having some form of whiskey cocktail, talking to each other.
Girl, this is how we all function. We all three function this way. So I think a good way to do it is to come in with the stuff that you were pinging from, and we can take it from there, and we'll just see where it goes. Michael's up to date on Stephen King stuff, I think, and so we can just interject and go. But I like the idea of starting with what was triggering you since you just listened to that last bit, and it'll bring me into the back, reamalgamate me, and reamalgamate Michael back into that chat.
All right, so let's do that. And then at a certain point, let's stop and move to what will be for my patrons and your patrons or whatever.
Yeah.
So like when you feel like that there's a natural point for that, you know, then you can do that, or you can see that, then you interject and say where that you, or if I feel, you know what I mean? Like when you feel like it's coming, that that's a good point to stop and let's move over, then let's do that. And we may not get through all the stuff in one conversation, which I'm totally fine with.
Generally shoot for an hour, just like, so we keep it so that it's in our mental space that an hour kind of for that first half. And then,
okay.
No matter what happens, you know, you play it by ear. But if we just mentally think an hour, we're going to break and that's the slit.
The first thing I'm going to talk about may even take us an hour to talk about because it was so startling to me. Like I had to figure out the physics of it. Okay. All right. All right. So let's get started here. And is this a Cosmic Salon or a Strange Mosaic or a joint production or what is this?
It's a joint production. We're going to do it just like we do. So we'll put our outer self, you know, the second half goes to both of our, behind the scene.
We'll put the first half up on my YouTube channel and you can put it on your podcast.
Yes. Yep.
And the second half we'll each put on our Patreon. So, all right. So I'm making you co-host, which should give you record permissions, and I'm giving everybody screen share.
Okay, cool.
There we go. All right. There
we go. I also get recording permission.
Absolutely.
I won't share the last half, but unless it's someone I know. But
you got it.
I'll leave that behind a closed door.
Yeah, you absolutely get that. And also, I will nonetheless still send you MP3s because I'm recording through my mixer as well. So.
Okay. So everybody has their record permissions and everything. Everyone has screen share and all that. So here we go. Do you want to bring us in, or do you want me to bring us in? What do you want to do next?
Why don't you bring us in, Em?
All right. Here we go. In 3, 2, 1. All right, everybody. Welcome, welcome. You are about to step into a three-way.
Ménage à trois.
This is a joint episode of Strange Mosaic and Cosmic Salon, and Nish is here with me, as she has been many times before, but we're letting a gentleman into the mix that isn't Jerry and not Randy.
We have a new man.
We have a new target, a new victim, or however you like to think of it. And that is Michael. This will just be the first thing we need to clear up, because I have a feeling it's sort of both and. Is it Michael Wachter or is it Michael Watcher? I see you represented both ways in the.
It's both. Yeah. A lot of people just pronounce it Watcher because it's easier for them. But Wachter is the German pronunciation. But I go by Watcher, Watchtower, Watchter, whatever.
I like whatever. Watcher because of the Archangel Association.
Well, yeah. It is also Guardian. That's what the name means, which is Watcher. So, yeah.
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 It fits.
I figured it was both. I have one more question. Are you any relationship to somebody named Aiden Wachter?
No.
Because the very same week I first heard of you, Laura got a book in the mail about magic from an author named Aiden Wachter. So it was really weird. I've never heard that name before. And then he has a book called he has two books, but his first book is Six Ways, Approaches and Entries for Practical Magic.
I've enjoyed his work.
There we go.
Yeah.
All right. So, but I had a feeling, and if I'm understanding you correctly, if my intuition and what I've gathered from you so far is wordplay and interchangeable sort of iterations of words as part of your whole shtick, or the way you do, and I say shtick, I'm not cheapening it. Everything I do is a shtick.
Oh, no worries.
Yeah, right?
That's how my mind goes. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You like wordplay and number games and switching things around and like having right? Yeah, okay. So I figured that you not only are okay with, but you actually really enjoy as many iterations of your name and perceptions of that as people can come up with. Yes?
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Very good. Okay. So, Nish, maybe you want to come on and explain why we're doing this, because this was your idea and it's a good idea, but why don't you let people know sort of what because you know, some people who listen to my stuff might not hear all of your stuff and whatnot. Like, what happened and why are we here?
Yes. Well, it's been a long time coming. Michael's a good friend of mine. He's been out here a few times and he's brilliant and does a lot of different stuff. Like most interesting people I find, you just get into something you're interested in and start feeling around and seeing it. This is why he's a multi-talented artist in way different things from metalsmithing to ink paintings and all this. And his sense of dot connecting is on par. It's at this level with you, and then Michael has a whole number system he's put together that is amazing, and so when we did our show on Elisa Lam, Michael had reached out and because he listens to what I put out, and I think a good deal of what you put out as well, and he mentioned that one of the pictures in Elisa's photo feed was interesting because it tied into a film, and I did a show with him and we talked about that. And so that was kind of what gave me the idea that we spent so much time referring back to the Elisa Lam stuff that you'd been working on that I sat in on. And it became a really good show. You've heard it. And
yeah.
It was necessary for me to finally make this connection between the three of us, because I think Michael has so much to add in this, and this is the kind of water I think that I see him thriving in a lot of this just open dot connecting and going where these kinds of rabbit holes can take us. So that's how this started. I connected you and Michael, and here we are.
I just wanted to add to that. When I first started listening to you, Nish, I believe there was an episode of Nox Mente that you had Emily and Randy on.
Yes.
I'm not sure if it was a joint production there, but I remember that being the moment where I was like, oh my God, I need to talk to Nish. There's something, it was so far from actualizing then, but that moment was with you, Emily, we're also speaking. So the fact that we're speaking now is pretty amazing to me.
Yes.
So that leads us right into, like, I guess I'm going to start with what should be the ending, because what I think we're dealing with here ultimately is some sort of, well, retro causality, but only because, like, we're not understanding that time is looping both ways. And so we're experiencing things both forward and backwards and are confused as to which direction things are coming from. And I think that this conversation may help us to start to sort some of that out. And some of the things that I've been experiencing the last couple of weeks has really gotten my mind into a different, I mean, I've always known that time is not linear, but like I'm starting to see that even though it's not linear, there are sort of patterns or directional, like omnidirectional flows that are at least mostly predictable. So once you start to understand that that's how it works, you can start to correlate things in a way that will begin to make sense on a new level. So what I'm going to say here goes really closely with, it's not surprising to me that you said that, Michael. So I'm going to start at the end. And Nish, I don't know if you remember this, and I don't remember if I said it to you personally or if I said it when we had you on our show on Off Planet the first time. Right. But at the, when you guys had me on Nox Mente, that was the first time you and I had ever spoke. I then invited you to come on to Off Planet because of the connection that I felt. And I think, I don't remember if I said this on air or not. I'm at the point where I can't differentiate anymore, but I told you that when I first heard your voice, it sounded like it was coming to me from inside my head.
I remember you and I connecting on that.
Okay. So when I was listening to the two of you, I always do my important listening generally when I'm out running. In your episode, there are some auditory anomalies.
Yes.
I don't know if you noticed that when you were working on producing it.
I did, and I left them in.
Yeah, right. The auditory anomalies were the memory that I had back then of having heard you inside my head before.
Oh, my God.
And like what was interesting is it explains to me in some ways why Shane has always felt familiar to me, because at first I thought you were talking to Shane. I'm like, she said, this is Michael. This sounds like Shane. They're both Canadian, right? So Shane always had the sense of familiarity to me. But once I heard Michael, I'm like, oh, okay. Shane just reminds me of this guy. It isn't so much about Shane, not to denigrate Shane. Shane's my friend, you know, whatever. It's not that he's less important. But Shane reminded me of something else when I first heard him. It felt familiar, right? But a different way than you felt familiar. And quite literally, the effect that it sounded like when I was hearing the two of you in my earphones, which I use old school earphones, was as if it was voice to skull. It was right into my mind, not coming through my ears, when there would be those auditory things.
Oh, right? Wow.
And that literally, when I said, I'm standing there going, oh my God, this is the memory that I had before. So in the past, I was remembering things that hadn't happened yet. And that's been going on for me big time since I got here to Austin.
Oh, wow.
Right. And so I've talked about this a little bit on my show, but I'm going to just explain it to you guys so you understand like where I'm coming from with this, right? So I moved to Austin for the first time in 1999. And that was the beginning. I'm not going to say that's when weird shit started, because weird shit has been going on my whole life, but a new flavor of weird shit, right? Like, you know, like there's the Chatsworth flavor of weird for me, the downtown Los Angeles flavor of weird, the, you know, yes. And then there's the Austin flavor of weird, right? And What's interesting is I've lived in Austin several times. One time I lived in a totally different area of Austin and did not experience weird things. All the other times I've lived in an area that we're in just a very pretty close radius to each other and the weird stuff, right? And that area is right on the Colorado River. And it sort of sits right in the middle of sort of downtown Austin. And it's encapsulated on each side by power plants. Okay. So what happened, I had like weird things going on from the time I first moved here. And I've spent the years since 1999, early 2000 time, trying to unpack and figure out like what happened. Like, it was that space that you and I have talked about many times, Nish, that is like, was it dreaming? Like, how come like Austin seems different in my dreams than it does in real life? Like, I can't find the place.
Yes.
From my dream, right? I can't find it quite, but I know it's there, right? So was I drugged and taken somewhere that I just can't remember? Was it a dream? Like, what the fuck is going on? I think a lot of those things happened in those very first like few months, maybe the first year I lived in Austin. And I've been trying to understand them ever since. And so maybe I'd have some experiences that added to it, but the core of the really weird shit happened then, right? So what's weird is when I've visited Austin a few times in the last couple of years, and now that I'm living here in the same area and going around and doing stuff, I'm seeing things and realizing that the things that I'm seeing now were the content of the memories of the dreams before, right? or somehow, okay, so like we're in this one area down on the other side of the lake, and there's all these things that were part of my dreams, but they seem to be like in a slightly different place than I would have thought they were based on the dream. Like I was looking like, you know, sometimes maybe a half a mile in the wrong direction, right? Or 3/4 of a mile in the wrong direction, or a little sort of in the area, but not at the exact right spot. And I'm starting to see spaces that I remember from those either memories or dreams or whatever they are, right? And so I'm wondering, well, fuck, am I just now finding the spots that did things happen there back then? Right. And I'm just remembering now because I'm seeing them going, oh, okay, that's the place. Or was what I was experiencing in the past some sort of like was whatever the fuck I was involved in have something to do with time traveling into the future or peering into the future? And I was actually looking like having the experience that I thought I just had the other day. Like I was like traveling into the future and having it back then. And so I had a memory of it, but it hadn't actually happened yet because it involved time travel. Or peering or like remote viewing into the future, whether I was actually going to that place or just looking at myself go to that place, right? So I started thinking about that. And then one day I was out on a walk with Laura and we went like a different way, right? We did some different stuff. And there's this mural that I had been noticing I've been paying a lot of attention to murals and graffiti and things like that, right? But there's this one mural, there's a whole set of murals in this one area that I'm 100% sure were not here when I lived here before, but they're there now. And these murals contain all of the symbols on the murals that not only me, but you would associate as being important things to our programming. Right?
Yes.
Like certain archetypes,
yeah.
There's wolves, there's sacred geometry, there's like, you know what, I mean, there's like probably like, a combination of like between the murals, like 8 to 12 symbols that you and I would both classify as very meaningful in our programs.
Yeah.
They're on these murals that are on this same area where I have memories of being. So what if these sigils that are part of my programming were something that I saw when I time traveled into now back in 1999, like I had some sort of remote viewing or time travel experience that I've been trying to put together since then, and the mind control that was built around these sigils that I saw on the mural when I was here back then in the future, right? So I'm only now living the thing that I peaked in 1999. And what kind of solidified some of this for me was being on the same lake, running around, hearing you and Michael talk to me inside my head, right? So when I talked to you for that first time back in, I think it was 2017.
Yeah.
2017.
Yeah, I think so.
Right. Like I was familiar with your voice because I had already experienced the auditory hallucination. Like I had already been time traveled to now back in 1999, whereas now I recognize that that was what I was feeling when I talked to you the first time. So I like closed a loop when I heard you and Michael begin your conversation.
That's incredible. And one of the things that comes to mind here, and it'll be interesting to see what Michael says about this. I was, as you're speaking, and you know, we are dealing with these causality time loops often, and the nature of how deja vu links in like a chain link into them. Mm-hmm. And I was feeling a digital connection. So here we are where things are being more intertied electronically and digitally. And one of the things that's been very apparent to me recently is this this phrase, and it keeps coming up over and over again, live connection. And I feel like that's kind of where we are in the game right now. Like all of a sudden we were unplugged and now we're plugged, and not in a bad way. Yeah. But there's something about some of this that feels very serendipitous to me, and whatever shifting, like in Dark City, has gone on, there is a now, because of repetition, a real live connection to this causality loop.
Yeah, and I actually, like, I already am, like, we are about, I'm proposing this, but also already knowing this is going to happen, is there's going to be a physical get together between the three of us, which is where our connection, it's not like, we're not like finally getting to meet each other. That's actually where all this other stuff generated, right? We're about to move into the place. We're about to have the meeting sometime in the next couple of months that generated all of this connection we felt all these years together.
Ooh, I'm feeling it.
All right. And I know exactly where it's going to be. And I know like why it's going to be meaningful to you, but I can't tell you yet because that would take away some of the meaning.
Well, I love a surprise.
Oh, yeah.
Michael, what do you think about what I just kind of laid out there?
I love it. I love it. And it makes me think about a lot of what I'm onto right now. And that has to do with connecting times. And this has to do with the spider web and where those connections happen. Say you're moving along the spider web, you're coiling into towards the center. Mm-hmm. When you have a reverberation that happens within that web, you'll feel it, but you'll feel it more if it's at a connecting point with the web that goes to the center. So this is, this has to do with the moon as well. And I'd like to know what those symbols were on that mural.
Yes.
Do you have a photo of that? I'd love to see that.
Let me see if I can find it. Hold, let me see. I can probably pull it up. Let's see. Mural on Lamar. Let's see if I can, Lamar Street, Austin.
I'm glad you asked that, Michael. I had a note here too. It says see
images. There's a couple of them. There's a couple of them that are the main ones, but let me see if I can, let's start with the one I noticed first. Let me see if it's there. All right. Nope. That's one part. Where is the part that I'm thinking? Oh, it looks like maybe they changed. There's several of these. Let me see. On Lamar near the, it's under the bridge kind of thing that I'm thinking of. Why am I not finding the one that I'm most thinking of? Let's see. Let's see. There's a lot of them here, and there's a lot of murals, and I've been spending deep time with each of them, but one in particular. So let me see.
You take your time, and okay, if you find it, that'd be sweet, but it'd be great to make that connection between us three right now.
Yeah.
See that mural and move it into the future as well. So.
All right. So here, there's a part of it. Let me see if there's like, okay, it looks like they've been changing it over time. Right. Like I just moved back here a few weeks ago. Like I've been here for almost 2 months now. So as it is right now is not exactly there, but I do see a portion of it. And I'm just going to show you one portion of it that I can find and then see if I can find some more as we go. But here we go. So this portion right here is one portion of it.
Oh, sweet.
Okay, but there's...
There's the monarch.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's one portion
Star
of it.
Star of David, yeah.
And as you can see, there's, like, this is, looks like this is different. These are all around the area. This is not exactly what I'm thinking of. Like, what I'm...
Our Lady of Sorrows.
Yeah. So it looks like it's changed. There's a lot of murals everywhere in Austin. Here's, like, let's see if I can find... See, like, when I looked up originally on... What's the one that I'm looking for? So when I first put Lamar Street, Austin, like it showed several different murals in different locations, like this right here and this right here are the same location at different times. So actually, no, that's the other side of the street. Never mind. This one here is further up the street from this one here. So what I'm going to do is before we get together for our next conversation, I'm going to go catalog them. I haven't been over there since I had this realization about what was going on based on hearing your guys' voices the other day. But I will go back and take pictures of the segments and be able to explain, like, there's wolf, there's butterfly, there's certain sacred geometry symbols. There's like all sorts of stuff, right? Like it may go on and on and on. I will go over and take some pictures and we can kind of return to that.
Okay.
Many things which you and I have talked about over the course of the years are represented in the mural.
Well, this one with the wings alone is pretty incredible.
Mm-hmm.
The two, the split and everything.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, Michael, what else were you getting on?
Well, I've been like pretty submersed in Stephen King, as you were saying. And the idea of twinning and that mural that we just saw that you were, you're speaking of, Nish, is this twinning aspect. Now in a lot of his books, there's, I'll kind of describe some of his first works and then kind of move with that and then how that relates to the spider and kind of time. So Carrie was his first book that he wrote at 27. He was born in 74, or born in 47, and then in 74 came out with Carrie, which is, you know, I'm sure you've seen the movie Emily, but it's about a girl named Carrie White who develops TK abilities, telekinesis, and has some traumatic experiences that cause her to use those abilities to hurt other people, but also like she's wielding these powers without really knowing how to at first. And so the movie ends differently than the book, and this is one thing that I noticed, and this kind of talks to what's going on right now, and that is that at the end of the book, so she just had this ability. The end of the movie, the gates to hell kind of opened up and she was never seen again. So in the end of the book, it talks about what they will now do, knowing that there's people with this TK ability out in the populace. And they need to take measures to make sure that it doesn't happen again. So this is the idea of like screening people at birth, finding out what their genetic code is, finding the gene that gives people this ability, and either eliminating it or deadening the ability so it can't be a problem later in the future. Now, that's an interesting concept right there. And it seems to have reverberations into this period now. And we also have, you know, The Shining was in 77. He has a lot of ideas with young children gaining these abilities. The Talisman as well. Jack Sawyer was able to flip between worlds. And this was on the Mississippi. And that's really important as well with what I'm looking at right now. Because the Mississippi just has a very important role in all of this. And you can see that with, you know, Michael Wan's work on the Susquehanna and all these waterways are really important.
The Mississippi is a huge one, and so is the Columbia.
Yeah, absolutely.
Interestingly enough, Michael and I, it's not out yet, but we just talked about the Mississippi River really for the first time yesterday in our weekly playing the glass bead game. We got into like some weird stuff with Tina Turner, and we sort of declared her the river goddess of the Mississippi River, and started to explore what the Mississippi River has been used for alchemically. And if you really look at her, she starts, if you really look at her and what's going on with her, she starts to look a lot differently than we, different than what we just, if someone just says Tina Turner, you immediately think of, right? If you really start to look and connect and whatnot. And I mean, she's a, in a way, like I didn't recognize it the same, like for me, it's very easy to recognize how someone like Deborah Harry was used in the mind control programming stuff for me, right? Tina Turner seems quite a different character, but when you really start to dig, she actually has a lot of the same touch points, right? In terms of what she represents and whatnot. And I had this kind of unwinding over the course of the last 2 weeks on our show about how Tina Turner really was woven into my shit in a way that I hadn't recognized. I just always thought that I liked watching her do Proud Mary, you know? But yeah, there's something else.
The Thunderdome too.
Right? There's all sorts of shit with her, right? But it's interesting that you say what you're looking at right now, because Michael and I have really, he's going to come down here and we're going to do a whole working on the Colorado River that runs through Austin here, because I think there's no question Austin is being set up as sort of like the new, like sort of like futuristic city of the world, in the same way that like Giza was on the Nile, right? The same way that like the Susquehanna was used for a certain period of time and whatnot.
The Mississippi was an old gateway, right? You have the old gateway to the West. And I think it keeps moving west. So
I think, and, it just,
and I think also that's where Laura and I both grew up. Basically, the Iowa is bordering the Mississippi, so we have that influence.
Jeff and I did a dump on the Mississippi River, and we looked at where these riverboat cruises that go all the way up the Mississippi stop. And it's quite an, like, there is no other river in the United States that gets these kinds of cruises. It's been, it's kind of interesting. We're like, maybe we have to go on one of these. But if you look at, like, if you watch a show like Ozark and you look at like the rock and roll scene at this time that Tina Turner was coming up, and you look at some of the deals that were hatched along the Mississippi and stuff like that, you start to understand that it was the, a later iteration of the Nile, of the Seine, of the Susquehanna, and now we're moved over to this Colorado River area here in Austin, which there's two Colorado Rivers. This is not the Colorado River that's in Colorado. This is the Texas Colorado River, but we're seeing like all the same stuff set up in the altar, which is the city around the river that we've seen in some of these, you know, other what we think of as ancient places, but maybe they're futuristic places. But I'm just curious if one of the things you're looking at right now, Michael, is the book Time Rivers by Goro Adachi, because I just got that in the mail the other day. And like, it's pretty, like all of the things that I've been playing, I haven't read it yet, but all the things that I'm playing around with in my mind seem to be represented even in just the little summary on the back of the book.
Oh, wow. No, I'm going to have to get that. But I've just been diving into, well, King mainly, and him having to write, or writing The Talisman, which was came out near my birthday, and that being on the Mississippi, and kind of it having to do with Huck Finn, the adventures of Huck Finn. But then also St. Louis and the Mound City coming up for me a lot. And just mounds in general around rivers. Also, my friend was filming a series here for HBO that had to do with the Mississippi, and we kind of talked about the Mississippi. So it's just shown up in my life a lot, and there's a lot of little connections that are really fascinating to me that I need to put together into something. But, you know, I've got other things on my plate, so that is a future project for me. But I'm glad you guys are working on it too.
I learned to swim in the Mississippi. That was and you're not supposed to because of the undertow, but my cousin and I would get in the Mississippi, and that's where I actually learned to swim. And we would cross the, you know, there are points where it's not as far apart, and depending on the season, one shore to the other, and one bank to the other. And the Mississippi plays a big role in my very early life, before up to 11 years of age.
I have to go there because, Memphis is there, which I really want to go to Memphis and have for a while. Also with its connections to Egypt and water and gateways. And then you have St. Louis and the Arch, gateway to the west. And on either side of St. Louis, if you draw a line to Chicago, you'll go right through two different Springfields. Springfield, Illinois, and then what is the other Springfield? I can't remember. It's on the other side.
Laura says Springfield, Missouri.
Missouri, that's right. So you have this, you know, Springfield being the town in which kind of defies time. You have this Mandela effect, right, with the Simpsons. So this is interesting to me on both sides of the Mississippi. And then you have it ending. Where does it end again? In New Orleans, I believe, or near there, right? So, and New Orleans having to do with magic and death, and I just find that really fascinating, and I'd like to dig in to that and spend some time in New Orleans.
So that's kind of the content. It's interesting, like we're all looking at the same stuff. So Jeff and I were doing a little thing on New Orleans the other day, and then we started working our way up the Mississippi River and looking at all of these things, and all of these spots which you are talking about are kind of things that we've touched on, or, you know, like if you followed some of like Chris Knoll's threads and things like that, other people who do synchro mysticism, like some of these spots come up and whatnot. So there is, you know, the mound stuff is really interesting. And of course, the proximity to rivers of a lot of these mounds. And it's like, well, what is causing these mounds, right? And this can move into at some point, you know, the particle accelerator conversation, power plant conversation, and they're always proximate to rivers and like what is really going on there. The areas are interesting, but I recommend that you get this book because it looks to me like this book is from 2002. That a lot of the things that maybe are connective, you know, we kind of have figured out some of the points he couldn't connect because he wasn't in the future yet. And we're here now and we sort of need to look back at sort of what he produced then. But what you were talking about in terms of the spider web and the connective points, mm-hmm. I have something like that, a shape that I've been using when I'm thinking about this that I'll just show you real quick. And I've been referring to this for months on different topics, but I keep coming back to it. There's a techno artist named Jeff Mills that I told you about the other day, and I showed you this, right? And he has a track and like an album and whatever, but he also has this shirt. And so we have these two points in time, and we think of everything as being connected linearly. But what it really is this sort of figure eight infinity loop sort of around beacons or two anchors in time, right? And so there's the part of that we can see, and then there's this little bit, this invisible part behind that we can't quite make sense of, right? That we think of as like the part of our memory that we can't recover, or where the magic trick is or whatnot, right? So this is kind of like the visual that I've been using a lot lately in terms of trying to rectify this time loop that I've been experiencing or whatnot. But the spider web is interesting as well, especially when you look at the geometric compartmentalization, a technique that was used by like Cecil Rhodes and some of their groups in the way that they compartmentalized and stored information, right, as well. So the spider web actually looks like the same configuration that they used.
Also the eight legs of the spider web. And this is interesting because you have the symbol eight, or like a figure eight, which is infinity, but it's also the idea of consumption and moving energy from one point to another. So if I ate something, it's taking that energy and then transforming it to be used by my body. And that becomes a part of you, but it's also not a part of you. So you have this idea of the eight, the consuming, and the phoenix, and fire. This is it's an interesting thing for me. I really find it fascinating, and that has to do with the spider. But this is kind of the dark side of the tree that the spider inhabits. And this has to do with the moon. And if you have you read It or seen the movie It? This gets back into Stephen King. So it is like a supernatural being made in kind of the likeness of Lovecraft's monsters. King was really interested in Lovecraft and decided to make a similar monster with It. Now it has a 27-year cycle, a sleep cycle, and then it wakes for a year or two, somewhere around there. But if you just look at those numbers there, you have the moon with a 27-day cycle or 27-day sidereal cycle, and then your sardonyx 29 or close to it. So you have this wakeful period and a sleeping period, which I find really interesting. So you have this connection between it and the moon. In the movie, it plays upon your unconscious fears and causes, like, feeds off your pain and emotion and all these kind of things, uses your mind to trick itself, like whatever you're most afraid of, it kind of manifests as. And it's seen as the dancing clown, or called Pennywise. Mm. Now, Pennywise, for me, this has to do with silver. This has to do with the moon and the wisdom of the moon. But it also has to do with so Penny is short for Penelope, which means weaver. So you have this idea of the spider coming into this. And there's a couple old English fairy tales that the moon and spider were friends, and the moon sent the spider down to tell humanity not to be afraid of death, because it is a magical thing and it's a transformative thing. And so when the spider came down to tell that, the hare found the spider, and then the hare said, "Oh yeah, I'll be faster. I'll give the message. Just what's the message?" And the spider said, "The moon wants the earth and everyone in there to fear." He said something like, "Not to fear," but the hare misunderstood and just heard fear, and he's like, "Okay, I'll run down, tell him." So the hare came down and told humanity to fear death. And this is like where we see the hare being always afraid. When you see a rabbit, it's like constant fear of the predator. And this is the idea within us, the constant fear of the predator. And the spider, in a way, shows you the web. But in it, at the end of the movie, it shows its one of its forms, which is this gruesome spider that they defeat. And they do this in the sewer. So I think this is the dark side of the Tree of Life. This is, and I think in the dark side of the Tree of Life, they've talked about spider creatures. So that even makes sense. But it's the dark side of the moon that has these abilities to transform the thoughts into darkness, right? And it's all based on fear. And if you can stand up to that fear and pass through, I think you'll be better off. Like, the idea for me is to take the middle path in this sense. But you have Pennywise... and the spider and the moon, to me, I just clicked and thought venom is also one of these creatures. It's a symbiote. Venom is a symbiote. If you if you're familiar with Spider-Man and the Venom and the Marvel comics there, you'll know that Venom is a symbiote, and one of his creation stories, or not creation stories, but one of his origin stories is he was from the moon on a capsule. And this is the movie. The movie shows this. But so he's this black goo form from the moon that takes over bodies. And, you know, usually it's kind of the dark side of them that he inhabits and magnifies. So we have this this idea of black goo. I'm sure you guys have heard of black goo and probably are familiar with a lot of the black goo tropes in like the X-Files. Mm-hmm. And there's so many other things yes. it comes from. But to me, this is like, this is, well, if you look at the origin story of Venom, he was made, the symbiotes were made by something named Null, this like primeval force of darkness. So it is a part of reality, and it's a destructive part of reality, but it's really well described and visually on the card, the tarot card, the moon, is you have the dog and the wolf on one side, right? The two aspects of, you know, carnal desire, just shredding apart things, like, and you have the idea of the werewolf here as well. And then the domesticated side that just kind of goes with everything and has this unconditional loving aspect. And then you have the crab, which is coming out of the sea, or you could see it, the lobster. And the lobster has this path, this moonlit path. But both of those, the dog or the wolf, would rip apart this thing and eat it, right? So you have to walk this thin path to the dark unconscious, or through the dark unconscious. And to me, this is where like the silver comes in, the silver on the eyes of the dead, to get them past the waters, the dark waters that they have to get to the other side. So a lot of this is death and facing fear to get through that. You also have the lobster being able to be in the water, and then outside of the water has this dual aspect. So it's really interesting, but all this to me is telling me like to examine the fear, of your past, and, kind of go into those spaces and rework what's there. And this is part of the time travel that I would suggest people trying, reinvigorating some of those past lives, or those lives are here now within you. You just have to be unlocked, and there's darkness there that hides them. So I don't know. That's the it. So portion of this.
I want to real quickly, before I have some comments about the it portion and the eight legs of the spider and stuff, but I do want to real quick circle, because I think it's pertinent to both of these stories, circle back to what your description earlier of Carrie and what was going on with that. I maybe saw that. Is that the one, like, does her head turn around on her neck?
What movie? No, that's a different one.
That's okay. The Exorcist.
Okay. I don't know. Okay. I don't know if I've seen Carrie or not, but came out in 1974. I was born in 1975. I may or may not have seen it, but what you're talking about children starting to develop telekinesis or extrasensory abilities in the future, and this desire to stop that from happening, right? Like, one of the things that I'm really starting to play with in my head in a different way. I play with things all the time, but is that what we think of as like MK Ultra or projects or programs, we think of it as something that they were doing to try and make something happen. Maybe a better way to look at it is through this sort of retro lens of like, they were actually, it was a reaction to something that they knew was coming in the future, and they were trying to stop things. Because think about how many times people, like Nish, you and I've talked about this, I talk to people who have project program memories all the time, like they had abilities before that they don't have now. Right?
Oh, this is great. And it comes, you're bringing me right back around to the reason why I brought up Carrie. And how it has to do with the moon. And so the term lunacy, right, comes from the idea
Yes.
of the moon. But with these powers can come insanity, and there's something that it does and a lot of other creatures in the Stephen King mythos. They're called the Deadlights, and then they're these lights that you see.
Yes.
And you can gain psychic powers from them, but they can also drive you insane. And now if we look further in Stephen's career, you have the Institute, which came out in 2019, so recently. Now what you have with this is a bunch of gifted kids that are taken from their home. Their parents are killed, and then they're brought to this institute where they are given shots. It's called Shots for Dots. They give them these shots that enhance their abilities, but they see these lights they call the Stasi lights. And it's to get them to slowly see these lights before they lose their mind. And what they do with these kids is get them to focus on certain targets. And this is an assassination program. Now, once they get too far gone that they're not able to be conscious anymore, they go to like the backside. There's the backside in this institute where they're just mindless drones, basically, and they create this vibration that is the drone of the Stasi lights that they use all their power from. They draw their power from. So this is all really interesting to me and pretty pertinent in the times right now, and him coming out with this just before all of this stuff, you know, went down.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I'm familiar with said lights. But okay. So I also wanted to say to your next point about it and the moon and whatnot, it evokes a lot of like, okay, so a lot of like Crow's work. And then if you got into like when he, like, so he had like the lunar wave, and then he started exploring the Hadibov material, which was about the spider race of beings that was sort of like managing the earth type of thing, right? So like it kind of, it's like it brings up memories of that stuff. But the other thing, and I'm just gonna, you know, you kept saying the eight-legged spider, right? And whatnot, and you were looking at the figure eight. One of the other sort of entities that Nish and I have talked about since our very first conversations was this octopus entity that started appearing everywhere. So we're again dealing with eight, right? But one thing that I've been looking into recently, and I have to do a much deeper dive, but I think these things are connected, is Timothy Leary's eight circuit model of consciousness. Are you familiar with this?
Yeah, I am. But I think I've heard Robert Anton Wilson talk about it mostly.
Yeah. So I've been, you know, I did a show with Danny and Robert Forte about Timothy Leary that ended up going for several episodes because I just thought like I fucking hated this guy and I didn't have any like interest really in talking about him. But the farther I dug into him, the more interesting he became. And I don't know that we did four episodes on him. I don't know if we're done yet, but we're done for now. But if you look into his VR game Mind Mirror and his eight circuit model of consciousness, like what I actually think happened with Timothy Leary, and I would include John Lilly in this as well, that they basically, like Timothy Leary was both a victim and the author of MKUltra 2.0, like maybe not the first version in the 50s and stuff, but like what we got later in like the 70s and 80s. Was based on his mind mirror game and the eight circuit model of consciousness. And he was both a victim and the author of it because of exactly this kind of time looping that we're sort of talking about right. But his eight circuit model of consciousness, if you really dig into it, right, it connects to various types of alters that a person might have who would be in like the Institute or mind control programs or something like that. Like it talks about certain development of certain parts of your circuit, your nervous system and your ego and your personality and stuff like that. Right. So there's these circuits to your consciousness, but they're also characters that can represent those levels of like awareness and interconnectivity and consciousness and whatnot. And it also, when I was listening to you, and I was going to bring this up later, but I'll just drop it sort of now, and then we can go through some of my notes on the other stuff later. When you were talking about the von Lichtenstein burner and the sort of circuits that it, like the rings that it makes, and you were talking about circuits and when like one circuit comes to a close and then moving over to other circuits and whatnot, it really started evoking in my mind the same way I think the 8-circuit model of consciousness works in mind control programming and alters, and using the way that they're sort of turned on and turned off, right? Or that the main person moves between those. There was a huge correlation between that. So I just, this 8 is becoming present in everything. I'm seeing infinity signs and 8s used symbolically in everything right now. And here we have the spider, we have the octopus, and we have this 8-circuit model of consciousness and this sort of time tunnel kind of graphic and whatnot. And I just think there's a lot there, right, to sort of unpack. I don't think we can unpack all of that today, but I just wanted to sort of bring the 8-circuit model of consciousness into it. And if you haven't taken a look at it recently, I suggest taking a look at it. And like, I had to neutralize my opinions on Timothy Leary to look at his work. And once I looked at his work, I was actually quite fascinated at what I saw, because it showed me like what the problem we're dealing with is, but it also does, if you can sort of work on it and look at it yourself, not under the control of somebody else, does provide some of the solutions and answers to it, right? And it's always best to make a person who does that look like they're a crazy person and make everyone hate them, right? So.
Oh, yeah. I know. I was into to his work before I thought he was, an MK Ultra handler. So I read him before with just interest, without any preconceived notions. And I did enjoy some of what he was saying, and found it very interesting. I also have had my experiences with psychedelics and acid, and found them very valuable in certain circumstances. So, and I do think maybe he was used in a lot of ways, but you know, people doing good work are always used.
Yeah.
So it doesn't surprise me, and I think near the end, he had a lot of regrets, it seems. So yeah, it's all fascinating, but there's definitely some good stuff there and stuff to be looked at. Also, I'd love to get into the 8-circuit model at some point. And also the Stasi lights bring up the idea of the dream machine for me, Brian Geisen's dream machine.
I'm not familiar with that. What's that?
So he developed this dream machine, something he dubbed the dream machine. You can make one pretty easily, but you just need a really bright light and slits in your paper. So what you're trying to do is have a frequency of light being beamed into your eyes. You can do this with a turntable, and you can cut out little slots for the light to go through. But you close your eyes and stare at this thing, and this could be done now with, you know, VR goggles or whatever you want.
I see there's some kind of machine now. Yeah, there's a couple of machines that seem to do this. What's his name?
Brian Geisen.
Brian Geisen. How do you spell Geisen?
Let's see. Geisin, I think.
Okay.
Let's see.
Brian Geisen.
And Brian's Brion.
Oh, and I see that. Okay. Yeah. Oh, I've seen these kinds of things before. Okay. Yep. All right. Go ahead.
Right. So they were used as frequency emitters to bring your visual cortex up, and then create these lights that kind of flicker, and you see the psychedelic patterns and all sorts of weird stuff. So this is like a way to stimulate the brain through light synchronization, I guess. You'd kind of, I don't know what you'd call it, but that's the best I can think. But yeah, it's really interesting. And I think these things were probably used as well. You have also William Burroughs being a part of Geisen's kind of like community there. And a lot of interesting stuff with those guys, the chaos magicians, kind of the the beat poets.
Yeah.
So they were doing a lot of that kind of stuff too, and influenced a lot of the magicians of the time. So that's all. It's all interesting, and it all kind of ties to this MK Ultra work, and that ties to like Brookhaven Institute of Technology,
yep,
which is on like near Camp Hero, and that has to do with the Montauk stuff, and it's all related, and it's all within Stephen King's work, which is interesting. And you also have what was his name? Not was it Peter Moon? No, the other guy.
Yeah,
the other Montauk guy.
Preston Nichols.
Him saying that he started to remember this facility, went to this like a ray at Camp Hero in 1974, which is another one of these 27 years, right? And that's where he talked to a guy that seemed to remember him, and then all these kind of memories came back from this time. But they gave over the institute or this area to Brookhaven in, I think it was 74 as well.
And don't they have a particle accelerator there now too?
Oh yes, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this is also like in 47, they discovered the particles that would allow them to develop particle physics. So you have this 27-year cycle that I haven't really talked about much this time, but I think you did hear some of that. And it having to do with radioactive elements, and those elements having to do with humans that are the shining ones, right? These radioactive humans giving off energy. It's all connected.
I haven't heard you talk. I've heard you mention your 27-year cycle. I haven't heard you talk about radioactive elements and humans that are the shining ones. But this actually, right before I got on with you guys, I was having this conversation with a group that included Eric, where we were talking about like elements from the periodic tables being represented by certain people who are presented sometimes as gods or deities or celebrities or stars or whatnot. You know, this type of thing. The conversation was about something a little bit different than that. But yeah, I mean, that we're getting into a really esoteric understanding of what elements and particles are, right? And how much you can extrapolate from that, right? And understanding the world around us really does come down to how many different things you can do with these elements, right? And what you can do with these elements by speeding them up, slowing them down, shining light on them, exposing them to certain sounds, right? Combining them with other things. Like, I think largely when you have a depiction of like battle or war in like the Bible or any other sort of like text like that, what's really being encoded is that these two elements don't go well together. Every time these two meet, there's a problem.
Yeah, like the archetypes, right? You know,
right? Or some things go really well together and whatnot, right? But yeah, Nish, are you there?
I am, and I have plenty of thoughts on all this.
So why don't we let you unpack your thoughts on what we've been talking about here? And then after you've done that, we'll wrap up this first hour and move over to the patron segment. And we can maybe like move into some of my analysis of your guys' previous conversation, because I think that will open up a lot of really interesting pockets.
Sounds like a plan.
Cool.
So one of the things so these are my notes. This is what my thought process was going through listening to the two of you unravel some of this. And pardon me for a second. I had to belch. I have like, there's some high energy going on here, and it's really affecting me, by the way.
Yeah, my body's doing weird stuff. So.
Yeah, mine too. Yeah. It's really kind of overwhelming. So I want to talk about the image you brought up, Emily, in conjunction with two sets of fours, with the caduceus and the zygote And so here we go. It is the edge of insanity. The rabbit takes us to the edge of insanity. And at the edge of insanity, we find a crossroad. The crossroad is both a rabbit hole down into the darkness of the unconscious, of the sleep cycle, of the great sleep cycle. And then there is a path, and remember, we're still within this figure eight, that moves above and around the rabbit hole, above and around the membrane between sleep and waking. And within this, we see the 47 split of the crack in the wall of consciousness. And what is going on with that for me in conjunction with this is the idea of the lunar portal, lunacy, crazy, mad, insanity, that is part and parcel to all of this that has been talked about earlier and was definitely brought into the fold here. And part of this edge of sanity is this continual looping. Now, the thing is, with particularly with the image you showed, Emily, is that it's constantly moving in a way that is like a fractal, getting smaller or larger. But these
Are you talking about the shirt?
Yeah.
Or the two girls with the wings?
Well, I'm tying them together.
Okay. I didn't know which one you want. Okay, and by the way, I did find the one angle on a mural, the mural that shows some of the other symbols, and we can get back to them in a second.
Okay.
So you want me to show that figure eight? I'll show that symbol again as well. So here's this is the mural and the girl with the twin. And here's the other. All right, there we go.
And so I want to look at the idea of sleeping cycles. So one of the things with it is the sleep cycle. So in these two circles here that are connected and become a spiraling fractal of each other, a mirror existence. But there in the center is there is a membrane. It's a mathematical membrane in the center that you have to traverse to move from one space to the other. In the terms I often call it, it's the vesica Pisces. It's the overlap.
Yep.
And so with that, there is this idea of, well, what do we have? The mountains of madness, the theater, Hermann Hesse, the magic theater of the mind. And also the tractate on the Steppenwolf comes into play with the moon tarot card from the Rider-Waite-Smith deck that Michael mentioned earlier, where there's this idea of to get from one place to another, there's a gauntlet. And that's what I'm referring to as this membrane. Yeah. And I often use that example of the sea turtle and how few make it from the hatch of eggs to the tide waters, to the tidal waters. And this is part of the mechanism that ties into the idea of insanity and madness. You have to push through that membrane to get to the gnosis on the other side. And then as soon as you get there and attain that, like a roller coaster, you get to that peak and then you go down again. And there's this whole thing about dropping consciousness again and going into the sleep cycle. And I'm reminded of it. I'm reminded of the sleep cycles of cicadas. Cicada came up very hard here, and it came up in conjunction with the other mural, even though we recognize that as, I think, it looks like a monarch queen from me. But it doesn't matter. It's the symbol of going from one state to another, which is what the whole symbol of the creatures from caterpillar to butterfly or moth represent to us. This is that internal swirling in the dark rivers of self. And these rivers of self, when we're talking about the wall of consciousness, how they traverse, like in the bio-organic systems of our starships, of our temples, of our bodies, veins, arteries, nervous system, we see this all along in every aspect of what is the apparent natural world. And part of where I was tying in with some of the Carrie stuff too is when she takes her power, and ultimately there's this state of agency that happens where she is pushed to the edge. She's ostracized, and by all kinds of factors. The mother factor here is a very big deal. And remember, when we're talking about mothers in nature, they're not always nurturing and loving. Some mothers will eat their young. Some mothers, like the great sea turtle, they dump the eggs and move on. And so there's a coldness here that I've been exploring with the mother archetype period that humans tend to overlook. And yet we do see it playing out in the human playground. And so what ultimately this is bringing me back to is it's at the point of darkness. It's when we hit that barrier, the wall of consciousness, the darkest part of the tube from the womb to the new world, with the silver cord that is the umbilicus that we move through. And upon hitting the well of our madness, of one's absolute limit on the razor's edge, that we become born again. And this idea of born again permeates everything that we see in all these mythos. It's everywhere. It's in the sun cults. It's in the moon cults. It's in all the death cults. It's in all of this. The Latter-day Saints bringing back the dead in the name of someone that has passed. And so there's this idea of looping and causalities. And again, I want to get back to 47. 47 was and is extremely significant. And it loops back when you inverse it. It's 74, which Michael has brought up several times. And so I want to just lay that on the altar of this conversation.
Absolutely.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Very good.
The 74-47 thing to me is interesting, right? Because of all the things that were going on in 47, and you know, for like the way I understand the world is by personalizing things, right? And in 1974, I was conceived and my mom was working at Tavistock.
Yes.
Right. And so it's kind of like, okay, and my mom is German, right? Like that is her heritage, right? And there was a lot of, you know, stuff, you know, that pre-Tavistockian stuff comes from the Nazi stuff that was, you know, 1947 is a big year with all that kind of, you know, whatever that evokes in people's mind, right? So I don't know, but when you're looking at that image, the two points of time, I'm going to go back to that in a second, but since I'm just here already on this, here's the mural from a different angle. It wasn't so close up, right? So this is what it looks like right now, this portion of the mural. So you can see, hun, there's a wolf here.
Yes.
Right? There's bats.
Yes, and the moon.
There's the hooded girl, which it's so funny. There's like, I have a weird story with this, but like this is the way that I've been depicted in a lot of things that have been shown to me in certain things, right? Like I wear a hood like this sometimes when I'm dancing at parties, right? kind of thing, but they got the butterfly here. There's all of these sort of chakra representative symbols, and sacred geometry.
Sigils, mandalas, yeah.
Right, mandala around it, sort of a floral representation of a sun, but with more of a moonshine kind of thing inside of it. What did you say?
Like a lotus.
Yeah, there's like, across the street, there's a lotus, but then we have the monarch. So this is the two wings of the monarch. There's the monarch butterfly going away, and there's obviously like a pregnant woman dancing in the moon, right? And, you know, I have lots of moon symbolism in my reality, you know, but there's a bunch of interesting stuff in here. When you see it in person, there's some more things woven in that you can't quite see here, but this is one portion of the mural. There's one on the other side. There's one across the street. There's tons of murals all up and down Lamar, which Lamar, if you kind of do wordplay, it's another way of saying mural in a certain, you can play the, change the letters and the words around and whatnot. But this is, when I looked at this and I thought about like all of the archetypes that have been used, there's more archetypes than what's presented here, but this is some of the heaviest archetypes and symbolism and sigils that were used in my programming. And I'm going to guess in yours as well.
Yes. And you said something that I cannot move forward without addressing, your conception date. And this is one of the things, I think part of the fuckery that's gone on in the world of astrology is people lose sight of the more important date that is more, to me, more important than when you pop out is the conception date or period. And it's easy to guesstimate. It gets you to a general checkpoint, star in the sky of time space, right? And that is significant. So I'm super thrilled that you mentioned that, because you were conceived in 74.
I was conceived in 74, and my astrology is very different if we go to the point of conception. I've done my astrology on the point of conception. It's very different than my astrology, my June 29th astrology, right? But it explains, like, you know me just from this iteration of me. Well, we've had lots of conversations and stuff like that. We haven't met in person yet. You're not with me on a day-to-day basis, right? I think that, like, you know, we did this zygote astrology several months back, but when we looked at the astrology for that, it explains some other parts of my personality, like, right? Like, I have lots of different layers, right? Like, I'm one version to the public and another version at home. And it's not my real self. It's just that, like, I'm probably more sensitive than people would imagine that I am, right? Yeah. I'm also more introverted than people would imagine I am. The extroversion is part of my shell.
Yes.
Right. That's part of my projection and whatnot. There's, you know, so there's some different things, and it goes to that astrology. Both things are true about us, right? The birthday is a truth. The people who say that that's not a truth at all, that's wrong too. But that conception date is really important. Those are two nodes, two points in time that have one of those eight tunneled loops around it, right? And then from each of those points, you can branch off to different ones. But anyway,
the birth date itself is the conception is when you enter the game. The conception is when you make the contract with whatever, whomever, however, and you come into this figure eight, into the infinity loop. The birth date is a causality of that. So the birth date is very significant, but remember, it is just a causality of the conception.
Correct. The birth date is like the day that you actually sort of get to get on the field and play.
Yes.
Right. Kind of thing. Like, you get your shoes and you get to like go from just like, you know, the sitting and watching to the beginning to play, to moving around, right? To sort of like feeling out the dimensions of the field and stuff like that, right?
Yes.
So I want to go back now, but I would love to like take you on, like go and look at some of these murals and stuff sometime with you. There's so much there, and it almost begin, like, it would make, I mean, like, it really started to change my perception on what the projects and programs A, may have been all about, but B, how they like decided what the content of our programming was going to be. And it had to do with our landing point with certain times with time travel, right? And the things that we observed there. And then continuing to reinforce those symbols, those memes, those thoughts, those ideas to make sure that we actually got back there.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So now I want to just go back to that, time tunnel thing real fast and show you something. While you guys were talking, I was just like, I'm just going to count. So watch this. So if you start at the center point, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then the next one enters you into the time tunnel. So you have 7 circles, and when you hit the 8th circuit, you are now going into the time travel. So my guess would be that the 8th circuit model of consciousness was part of the training to become the time traveler, right? And when you hit circuit 8, when you were able to sort of exist at that layer of consciousness, then you can do this.
Yes.
And if you come over here, same thing. So you've then traveled over here, and then you go back in, like when you were giving that beautiful connection, that beautiful thing about you hit a wall and you go back inside. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm sure Jeff Mills was very deliberate in how many tracks he chose to put here and whatnot. But that wall, right? Like it seems to be that barrier between 7 and 8, whether you're moving from the inside out or the outside in, right? That is, you know, where you are just become one again, or when you can travel into the many sort of thing, right? Like, which is fascinating to kind of think about.
I would like to get, as we move into the end of the segment, I would like just because we're right here, to get Michael's thoughts on the 7-8, because the numbers are a thing. He's got his whole theory. And so I was just curious if we could wrap it with that.
Yeah, so, man, it's all really interesting. I've got a lot to say about what you guys just said. Sparked a lot in me. But we have this, if I just talk about the 47 for now, it's something that comes up in my life constantly. In my number system, weld is also 47. I'm a welder. 47 is the atomic number of silver as well, and we have this correlation between the moon. We also have 7 times 4 = 28, which is the moon cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Saturn also.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. And then the 2 8s is your 88 miles an hour that you need to reach so that you can travel in time.
88.
Yeah, it's 88 miles an hour. So they have this trope is kind of everywhere, this 88 equaling time travel. Mercury is also associated with 88. And now Mercury is the fastest mover, and it moves between the heavens and the earth, right? Like this is the psychopomp of Mercury. So it's the messenger god who can travel between both worlds. And this is about the twinning of reality.
Well, it also makes me wonder about Mercury fillings and if the purpose for that was time travel.
Well, I think it has to do with belief. And Mercury being this energy, you know, okay, when Neo transfers over to the other world, he goes through that mirror, but it is mercurial and it fills him. He touches the mirror. So this is the idea of Mercury pulling you to the other world. But it's also like a bit of a vortex, and that has to do with the moon and has to do with magnetism. And if you think about a magnet, there's a central column where the force lines kind of move around. So you have this empty space within the center that creates a toroid.
Toroid, yeah.
Yeah. So that central point is the stripping of everything into this nothingness point that propels everything outside and back around to create this cycle. And you need to be stripped of everything to go through that. So this is kind of the sleep cycle in my mind. And this is what the moon does to us. It pulls you in, and what's left when you get close to insanity is all the darkest things that haven't been stripped from you yet. But when they finally do, you're reborn, as Nish so beautifully put it. And I love the idea of the rabbit hole, because we also have the trapdoor spider holes, right? You have these spider holes, rabbit holes.
Yes.
Now, these are just two aspects of the same kind of idea. And both, you have this fear with the spider. But the fear of the spider is internal. The fear that the rabbit has is the fear that the rabbit has. You're seeing the fear out externally. So, if I want to talk about 47, it'd have to be in regards to my system. Also, one interesting thing is 7 is the fourth prime. So you get this 4-7 connection again. Now, if you're looking at a cube, you have 4-sided cube, or sorry, 6-sided cube, but it's based on fours, right? You've got these squares, and you only see the 7 sides. The 8th side is on the back side. So this brings in the 8, the unseen, the backside of the tree, you know, this transference of energy. When you're looking at like a, what do they call it?
Well, it's like when you can't see the back part of this, like there's this little part where it's
exactly
behind, right? And that's the part you can't see. It's very similar.
Exactly. Right. But there was a word I was trying to figure out, but it doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. One interesting thing as well with the 4 and 7 connection is you have the area of the heptagon being calculated by 7/4. So a heptagon is a 7-sided shape. So this is just really interesting. There's so many connections between the two. And in my system, 4 is DL and T, and that's Dalit, and that is the door, and that is the cube. This is the building blocks of our reality. It's kind of like the scaffolding, and 7 is what animates it. You have the 7 colors, right? Like 8 is outside of this. 8 is a transference of energy from one block to another, and this is reality to reality. And this has to do with the moon, as we said, the 4 and 7. Now 7 in my number system is PH and X, and this represents the Phoenix. 7 is G, O, and W. And that represents, the gods of the world, or the gears of the world. And this is how light moves between angles. We have the 7 rays of light, colors of light in our spectrum, 7 notes before we hit the new octave. And so you have this idea of the form of reality, this block-like form, the digitized, like DLT is also distributed ledger technology. So that's interesting. Our blockchain is this organic blockchain that we're in, you know, with the Akashic records and all. So then you have the 4 pillars of the earth. This is also the 4 seasons and the 4 main archangels. And then you have the 7 archangels. So we have the idea of angles. Right. And this, the 7 being the 7 main planets, the 7 archetypes, these are the realities, or what kind of dress up the world. And these are aspects of ourselves. So this is how 4 and 7 relate, and how they relate to the moon. And, you know, 27 plus 27 is, that's 54, shoot. But 47, so this is how it makes sense to me. 1947 is the year 2700 in Roman. It's called Ab Urbe Condita, which is the Roman calculating method of years. So 2727 is 1974. Now we have those two dates as 27 years apart. So you have this 27-year cycle, and 47 is a really important part of that in our age that we're in now. So I think this is the age of the moon and moving through that fear and all this. And those are my thoughts. I can go deeper, but we're kind of trying to wrap this up. for and get behind the curtain.
So just, I want to go back to that Mercury thing for a second, right?
Mm-hmm.
My mind got stuck on that. So there's someone in the Project Kids group whose mother was a dentist, and she's like, Mercury's not poisonous. She's like, I used to play with it when I was a kid. I played with it, right? My mom would let me play with it, and I'm not brain dead, and I'm not sick, and I'm not dying, and whatever, right? It would be interesting if Mercury is somehow related to time travel, right? And they were putting this in people intentionally, or they put it in and then realized that this was creating some types of time anomalies or something like that going on. And then for some people, it doesn't really matter because they're not super aware. But think about all the people who are hyper, who are aware, who take good care of themselves and who are in on this conversation have all gone and gotten our Mercury fillings removed.
Yes. I did.
Yeah.
So like, therefore making it, I have like one remaining little thing left in my mouth. So I don't, maybe I should hang on to it. I don't know. Right. But like, think about that. Like, they've created this fear about Mercury. Right. And it's like, when you're talking about TK abilities and things like that, and they need to go back and make sure that this doesn't happen again, like creating a level of fear around Mercury, which is one of the elements necessary for whatever the alchemy is for time travel or whatever it is. And you get all the people who would be the most important and effective time travels to remove their time, part of their time machine from their body, right? It's fascinating.
Yeah, I've posited this a few times too. And the 88-day orbital period of Mercury makes this very clear to me that in popular culture, all the symbolism leads to this being a time traveling device.
Yes.
All right. Very, very, very interesting. Let's wrap this up and move over to the patron segment. I will include in the show notes a link to the recent esoteric journey where you went through your system, Michael, so that people can
understand
what you're referring to. They can, you know, maybe they can go back and, you know, listen to that before they try and unravel all the things that you've said here. So I'll include that there. Before we go into the patron segment, tell people where they can find you. And Nish, you can do the same. I'll do the same for our various platforms. Everybody knows where to find everybody.
A best place to find me is just on Instagram, where I have all my art. My website is on there too. And my Instagram is at Omniarch Inc with a K. And that's it. And you'll find the website there. I'm constantly updating it. So it'll mostly be my art, but my writings and number system will eventually be up there in time.
All right, Nish.
And I am at the Cosmic Salon, and it's anywhere that podcasts are played. I house it on anchor.fm/Nish. And then my Patreon is also in the show notes of everything. And so that's also /Nish with two I's. And then on Wednesdays tonight, in fact, I still do my show. It's The Band with Jerry, so Nox Mente and the Obelisk. So those are links to me. I'm also on Instagram with two eyes. Twitter is locked down, so you'll have to send me a request.
All right. And I can be found on YouTube, Rumble, BitChute, and Facebook as Emily Moyer. You'd like to support my work or see the spicier or more interesting materials, you can support me at patreon.com/offplanetmedia. Or if you don't like Patreon, it's a little like clunkier, but there's not some of the censorship issues there. You can support me at emilymoyer.locals.com. And I also have a new website up that still needs a little bit of refinement, but it's there. And that is emilycmoyer.com. All right. You guys can find us at the Patreon locations mentioned for the rest of this conversation, and we will see you on the other side. Awesome. I'm going to go pop.